can give me a call at 423-4833, and I'll pass on those numbers. Well, or I guess
well,
I can call you.
Or me a call.
Or you.
454-9392, because
right.
I also need hands to start the new station.
Right, Tom is looking to start a radio station that's freewheeling and free speech-ish, and it's 454-9492. Go ahead, I'm sorry, you were saying.
Well, let me see. I think we've pretty much then, of the other people, I think there are some people in Florida. There probably are people now, especially since this decision. I don't know how well publicized it's been, but since, I believe that for anybody to be worried about the situation now, at least until it takes a different, until the 14th of July, if suddenly the FCC comes up with some unsuspected, but that simply isn't going to happen. I mean, if you've got a judge there who has any idea, and obviously Judge Wilkin does, with any idea what the Constitution is about, there's no way that the FCC's authority can be defended over a micro radio station whose signal does not exceed the borders of the state. I mean, there's that technical argument, which is pretty important too. For instance, one of the things that happened to me, and apparently happened to Richard, was that local cops were called by a federal agent to arrest somebody. What was his probable cause? I mean, constitutionally, how dare he use tax? He's using local taxpayers' money to do what? To impose his authority in a situation where it cannot be imposed, where the law does not support him. Now, if anybody else did that, if I called up the cops and said, I want you to arrest so-and-so, the first thing they'd say is, what's he done, and why should we go, and why should we spend the taxpayers' money this way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but in the case of the federal agents, both in my case, when they came to bust me the first time, because the second time was the time the first time they came to do a reconnaissance in force, and they came with six LAPD agents, LAPD officers, so on, six, and two guys from the FCC, including their chief enforcer in the area, and so on. And one of the questions I raised immediately was, how come you guys can get two police cars and six guys? And they said, well, we, and I had invited them, unlike you guys who have said, until you produce a warrant, it's a judgment call, but I had said, hey, you guys, be polite, don't steal anything. But you're invited on the same basis that everybody in the community is invited to come in here and examine the operation. I said, if you want to talk about the legality of your position, let's talk about it on the radio. And of course, they didn't accept the
invitation.
The invitation, right? But anyway, you see, there are all kinds of minor, kind of ancillary things. Do you know why, for instance, the argument that the FCC makes about why they have authority over interstate? Over intrastate radio broadcast?
Tell me.
Because they say that sound waves never die, and like old soldiers, and so that sound waves, I made merry with this in one of my court papers, didn't do me any good, nobody else, but sound waves, therefore, at some point cross the boundaries, we must believe, if we believe that premise, cross the boundaries, and that's what gives the FCC authority. Now, if their authority is based on soundless sounds, on sound waves that are inaudible, you can see that it's kind of shaky. At that point, they'd have authority on Pluto, because sooner or later it would arrive
at Pluto.
Right, they never die.
That's a convenient argument, isn't it?
But I mean, the guy, and I heard, I have a tape here where the guy said that on, and I have, on television, and I got him saying that, and I said, oh God, I hope to meet that guy. At the time I was still on the air, and I said, I want to meet that guy in court. I want to meet him in front of a jury and have some fun with this guy. I mean, if that's the best argument they can come up with.
And then you met the jury in the American judicial system, and you learned better, right?
Well, not the jury. I never did meet a jury. They wouldn't let me have a jury.
Right, that's in the DA's hands.
A jury is people like you and me.
No,
a jury would never say I was, mistaken about this. And, it's completely, it's just completely unconstitutional, and it is a sign. They understand it's important because this government is making war on us, and the most important thing in war is the control of information, the control of communications. And so they know that it's not this broadcaster or that broadcaster, it's the principal. And I've said that right from the beginning. It's not my station. It's 10, I want to see 10,000 stations in this country, mm-hmm. you know, lifting the lid. And that's what, I think that's why they came down so hard on me, because they realized I was an uppity nigger and I had to be put, put
right.
in my place.
Exactly.
And, but anyway, thank you very much, Robert. I know you're very, is there anything that I can, I feel like I've been doing
oh, I think
exactly
you've done
what
a lot
you
of,
warned me about.
Well, you've been in the, I quite the contrary. Tom and I have had discussions in the past where I've accused him of monopolizing all the time. But I think you have had a great deal to say here, which people are not aware of, a great deal of personal experience, which is quite relevant to what's happening today and quite shocking. And, you know, you certainly deserve support in your struggle with your free radio station as well, both the one in 1991 and anyone that you try to put together now. And, you know, I'm glad you called, and I invite you to call again anytime you want, and, you know, keep us updated on what's happening and correct us in terms of any factual misstatements that are made and expand on whatever we're saying, you know,
okay,
as
well,
you did.
Thank you very much, Robert. And you guys, whenever it happens, you, your colleagues, and everyone within the sound of my voice will be invited to participate in the station after whatever manner they choose.
Right, and if you want to give Tom a call, why don't you give your number again, Tom?
Yeah, my number is 408-454-9392, and what we need desperately in order to be able to realize this thing, I have the equipment, as I said in a recent letter, I have the equipment, I'm told, but I need somebody who knows what to do with it, and also a place, hopefully rent-free, where we can broadcast from, because my place is not appropriate. I mean, it's not really possible. It's too small and so on. I broadcast out of my house in Venice, but it's not possible here. So the number again is 408-454-9392. And thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you, Tom.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, indeed. That was one of the early pioneers of free radio in Venice, Tom Reveille, who's trying to do some pioneering here in Santa Cruz. Our station and he went sort of different ways, but he is a man of experience, a man who's been in the struggle for a number of years, and certainly a man of some erudition around this subject. And I want to thank him again for calling in and invite him to call in again. Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides is the show you are listening to, and in the radio station is 89.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our call-in number, in case you have any comments, questions, or who knows what, is 427-3772, or 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And we do take all calls. We will talk to you, and we are interested in hearing what you have to say. We have been talking this morning about the FCC's recent threats to us in terms of showing up on the property with inspectors, which, considering the kind of experience that Tom and others have had in the past, does constitute a threat. It's not in the nature of an innocent matter. It seems like an attempt to intimidate the radio station. But as Tom has said, and I tend to agree with him, I think that at least until the 14th, when there will be a hearing in federal court around the issue of Free Radio Berkeley, this station is okay. I do have concerns, though, because I believe that this judge just happens to be a guardian angel out of the night, from the sky. She is also the same judge that struck down Proposition O in Berkeley. That's the proposition that was passed by the Santa Cruz City, the Berkeley City Council. I'm a little confused here. That said, you can't sit down on the sidewalk and you can't ask for spare change except under very restrictive circumstances and so forth. And that was passed by the voters very narrowly and then thrown out by Judge Wilkins in the main, completely thrown out. And so they aren't enforcing that law in Berkeley. But Wilkins is a rarity, as I'm sure people know. And I don't think we can rely on Wilkins. But perhaps other judges will get on us too, and or get down on the Constitution. I see we have another phone call. Hey, the phone is really ringing today, and so let's go to the phone lines.
Hi, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you're on the air.
Good morning. I'm just curious, how does a free radio station start? How do you guys get all the equipment together to even put together such a neat station that you guys got? I don't understand how that works. My name's Mike, and I'm calling locally from Santa Cruz.
Yeah, Mike, that's a real good question. You're dealing with a kind of an idiot programmer here who just comes in and does a show, but I can refer your call to other people if you want to leave your number, perhaps, or if somebody...
It was just more of a curiosity question,
yeah.
Listening to your station and kind of understanding what the last caller was talking about, trying to understand what free radio is really all about. Of course, we're swamped with, you know, broadcast stations up and down the dial.
You know, I have an expert in the station, Mike, who may be able to help us. She's been around at the... Let me find out. We have here Elizabeth. Elizabeth, you've been around for a while. Do you know how does one start a free radio station? How does one acquire the equipment? Let me put you on to Elizabeth here.
Sure.
There's a gentleman in San Francisco who sells transmitters, and it's relatively cheap, $250 to $300. And I think that's how we got started, and his name, I believe, is Stephen Denifer.
And
I'd have to do some digging here, because I'm right in the middle.
Well, I'm not trying to start one. I'm just, you know, listening to your program and conjuring up questions and trying to understand how what's going on with you and why the feds are really coming down so hard.
Well, they're actually not coming down so hard right now because they aren't that organized. They've been putting off court cases in San Francisco for a couple months now. Because it is something new, and they're going to have to deal with it now that the FCC, now that the FCC was voted against by a lawyer, a judge.
if they pass so that Radio Free Santa Cruz and any other station is able to broadcast freely on the air as you guys have been, is that going to change the whole radio spectrum in a sense for, let's say, amateur radio, for instance, where people, in order to get an amateur radio on the broadcast band portion of it, you have to have a license. Is that going to deregulate everything like that, or is it strictly for the FM broadcast type area that you guys are working with?
Well, I think prior to the 80s, there was a lot of these radio stations that are operating on low watts like we are.
Right.
And for one reason or another, they got pushed out. And there weren't regulations for them, and so they just couldn't exist, basically. What I think is going to happen is they will be forced to make regulations for lower watt broadcasters, and I'm not sure how that affects the things that you were talking about, but I know that there will be regulations, and we probably won't be able to speak as freely as we are now, but there will be licensing, and, that's what we're hoping for, it's just exciting just to get a bunch of radios going.
Really?
To speak freely, which is kind of a loophole, and this is definitely historical, what's going on, so.
How do you guys acquire your space on the dial to sort of pick a blank spot and shoot for them?
Yeah.
Oh, just kind of take grabs out of that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, the airwaves are there.
Yeah, that's true. How come you're not in stereo, by the way?
Hmm?
How come your station's not in stereo?
That question I couldn't answer you. I'm not sure. I know there is an answer for it. I've heard people talk about why, but I'm not sure why. Personally,
I'm okay.
So technical.
Well, anyways, thank you. Like I say, I listen to the station, and I can hear it in SoCal too. Get out there, and I don't always get a chance to, but it's interesting to listen to off and on. And the best of luck to you and the caller who's going to put up his station. I guess he's going to put up another one here in the community.
Apparently so. I wasn't listening to that, but I definitely want to encourage you to call in. And if you want to have a show yourself, you can come to one of our meetings and request anything that you'd like, particularly. And we really want to get people's voice on the air.
I've always wanted to try to stick my hand at this.
It's wonderful.
All right,
come on in.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth, and thank you, caller. Yeah, that is true. I want to remind our listeners that not only can you call the radio station and talk on the air, but we are interested in getting you to bring forth your own programs, and we do meet periodically. You can give a call after my show to find out the details of when the next meeting is. I'm a little out of the loop here because I have a somewhat permanent show. It's been going on for a couple months anyway, so I don't attend the meetings much, but I believe it's every Sunday evening, and give a call later to confirm that to 427-3772, and you can find out how you can get a program on the station. And that's what's going on here. We want you to be on the air. We want you to call on the air. We think that a large percentage of the public has been disenfranchised, both in terms of any meaningful decision-making in this country and also in terms of a voice in public affairs, whether it be through the media of print or radio or television. It's all in the hands of a few people whose interests fundamentally opposed to the interests of the majority of people of the world. And that's the great tragedy of the late 20th century. Maybe that's the continuing tragedy of humanity generally, that power tends to gravitate to a few, and then they use it as they wish to retain what they have. But let me roam through a few other topics, having spent three quarters of the show around Free Radio Santa Cruz and the FCC. There isn't actually that much new that has happened, and I'm a little bit embarrassed that I've spent so much time with it, but I guess it's useful because I think that two of the most powerful forces in our community now that I've been associated with have been Free Radio Santa Cruz, the station you're listening to, 89.3 FM, and the organization Food Not Bombs, which gives out free food 5 days a week here in Santa Cruz. They've engaged the interests of hundreds and hundreds of people at different times and continue to do so, and they're fundamentally an idea, like whose time has come. They are a way of an example for people throughout the country and throughout the world to begin democratizing at the most basic level and recognizing the most basic priorities, the need for information, the need for physical sustenance, the need to stop the waste, whether the waste be a few big, fat, mogul radio stations dominating everything, or the waste be this huge amount of waste we see in the cities every day, food going to waste and people going hungry and vast new appropriations for military expenditures and so forth. But I'm going to get back to local stuff because I'm interested in local civil rights issues for poor people, and that's really the basic theme of my show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Some of this, having said local, I'm now going to jump to San Francisco, concerns struggles in San Francisco that are going on even as I speak. The international gathering of Food Not Bombs is currently going on, and it has been going on for the last week or so, and will be going on for the next week, and it is in coincidence and built around the UN 50th anniversary celebrations, because as you may know, San Francisco is where the UN Charter was signed, and it's where all the hoopla and whoop-de-doo is happening around the UN's 50th anniversary. San Francisco, coincidentally and ironically, is the only major urban area where people serving free food are regularly arrested, jailed, and in some cases beaten by police for the act of making poverty visible and making food available in public places that embarrass the mayor, the Board of Supervisors, the large businesses downtown, the real estate developers and attorneys who regard themselves as the guiding light, as I would call the guiding darkness of the city, San Francisco. And I was up in San Francisco earlier this week. I wasn't arrested, but my friend Kim Argula, or Candlelight Kim as I call her, was. She's up there again, and the arrests are continuing. We actually had a report. I spoke last night to, I spoke to a fellow named Andy Rose, who's a tireless internet worker up there on the computers and the phones, getting out the daily kind of news sheet that they're putting out during the course of the International Food Not Bombs gathering called Soup du Jour. Interestingly enough, it's it kind of tells people what's going on each day. And what happened yesterday was Thursday. There were four people arrested at dinner, and they were arrested for showing up dressed in police uniforms, giving out donuts. They called themselves the Donut Liberation Front. And the police apparently were too hungry to resist, so they had to confiscate not only all the donuts, but also all the donut givers. So that happened last night. Amusing, yes, but also against the background of this, you should know that over 100 people, well, between 90 and 100 people have been arrested in the last 4 or 5 days for such charges as serving free food or being involved in a peaceful protest to demonstrate the lack of availability of affordable housing in San Francisco. Mayor Jordan, the mayor of San Francisco, or Juggernaut Jordan as I call it, has a Matrix program, what he calls the Matrix program, going on. a program which homeless people are swept up, arrested, harassed for sleeping in order to remove them from the downtown area and to send out a message that San Francisco is inhospitable to its homeless people in public places. Yet at the same time, of course, he claims this is a helpful program, the mayor does, that he's actually just putting these people in rooms and homeless shelters. Of course, the number of rooms and homeless shelters is about one-tenth of the number of homeless people in San Francisco, so that leaves about nine-tenths of the people out and vulnerable to the depredations of the San Francisco police force. Anyways, Food Not Bombs has been challenging this, as have other homeless advocates, by coming out and serving people food in public places, urging people to peacefully but forcefully resist violations of their basic rights by police officers and other authorities. And San Francisco Mayor Jordan doesn't like that. Food Not Bombs currently engaged in a controversy with the Board of Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors actually has twice voted to support the right of Food Not Bombs to serve free food. And one would think that that would be a word to the wise to the mayor, but the mayor has ignored that and continued to have his police arrest Food Not Bombs up there, not for health violations in the sense of food that makes people sick, but on the basis of a 1989-91 court injunction which bars Food Not Bombs from serving food in public places anywhere in San Francisco, actually from serving anywhere in San Francisco without a permit, and they can't get a permit because there's a political process in effect which denies anybody a permit in a public place. You can't get a public place permit as of 1990 because you need to get a site permit from the Parks and Rec Department. And in the summer of 1990, the Parks and Rec Department ruled administratively that no such permits would be issued. Now, they hedged their bets 3 or 4 years later when they tried me for serving free food. I was tried and convicted, and the only person ever tried and convicted, I might add, to toot my own horn, and then sentenced to 2 months in jail when a jury found me guilty in February of 1994. Parks and Rec claimed that anybody can get a permit if they're holding a recreational event. However, 135 permit requests have been made to Parks and Rec of San Francisco by Food Not Bombs without any permit being granted, or the specifics of a permit denial being issued. They simply have stalled. How they can stall for, I guess it's, what, 5 years since the summer of 1990? I guess you have to become an expert, but bureaucrats are pretty versed in such things. So, what's happening with Food Not Bombs in San Francisco? They're holding an international gathering where people from all over the country and all over Canada are coming to this gathering to show their support and their solidarity with homeless people in San Francisco, with the rights of the poor throughout the country, with the rights of human beings throughout the world who are, in essence, aggressed against by the United States' violations of the UN Charter. The United States engaged in a series of violations of the UN Charter that Food Not Bombs activists want to make evident to the UN and want to make public. And actually, I had a list of those violations, which there were four major concerns that Food Not Bombs had and then was bringing forward at the different demonstrations that they were holding up in San Francisco. And of course, my notes are all in Toledo. I'm unable to find what I'm looking for. The most direct and significant violation to me, because it personally affects me, is the arrest and harassment of people for serving free food. That is something that I have suffered mightily for. I've suffered hours and hours and hours and hours in courts and jails and harassment on the streets and in paddy wagons and squad cars simply because I supported the right of people to eat at Civic Center Plaza, where I serve them free food. The free food is now going out at UN Plaza at 12 and 6 every day. Actually, it's every day during the duration of the International Food Not Bombs gathering. Before that, it was 12 every weekday and 12 and 6 every day. This is good, healthy vegetarian food donated, cooked in private kitchens, and then brought hot to the sidewalk UN Plaza area where homeless people gather to eat. And if you think there's enough food for people in San Francisco currently to eat, you're mistaken. And nor should people be forced to wend their way into these little shame-darkened soup kitchens where people are getting a little charity and have to surrender great amounts of their dignity. Food Not Bombs is sort of a self self-actualizing, self-helping group where you, you know, anybody who eats the food can become a part of serving the food, can become a part of cooking the food. It's a way of changing things and at the same time dramatizing the misguided priorities of the city, the state, and the country. Particularly pertinent even in Santa Cruz, where legal aid, there was a demonstration yesterday, is about to be dumped. Legal aid is the service that funds not just homeless people, but it funds legal challenges for abusive landlords, helps tenants assert their rights. This is all going to go down the tubes, my understanding. I don't have the specific packet here, but Jan Butte's angry that legal aid has filed a lawsuit against the county for not meeting its low-income housing requirements, has decided she's going to make sure that nobody who's poor has any legal representation through legal aid. I mean, it's outrageous. I'm sure she has an attorney whenever she wants one. She can snap her fingers and one shows up. So the idea of her removing those protections from poor people, even meager as they are at the present time, very upsetting. And legal aid is fighting back. They had a demonstration, I guess it was yesterday at noon at the county building, and I caught the tail end of it. I guess the supervisors are engaged in budget hearings, and I encourage people to show up at those hearings to call to find out more information about that. You've got to walk to your phone, open the yellow pages, and call Board of Supervisors and find that out, because I don't have that information with me at the moment. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 89.3 FM, and this is your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris, jumping all over the dial. Your calling number, in case you want to be on the air with me, and you are invited to do so, is 427-3772 or 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And the phone lines are open, so seize this opportunity to tell me what you want me to hear and what you think the community needs to hear, because you have that opportunity. 427-3772. Well, a lot of services around homeless activity are centered at the Day Resource Center, which is out at River and Highway 1. And every day at 4, there is a free meal there served by Karen Gillette and her staff. They've been doing this for 4 or 5 years now. Karen also runs the Day Resource Center, or Day Center. And I spoke to her this morning. She's trying to get an update on what's going on out there. Karen and I have often had our differences in the past, and I've been critical of different aspects of her programs, and no doubt may well continue to be so in the future. But we do have long-range, certain basic, I think, joint concerns about basic rights, if not basic rights, basic services for homeless people. I think basic rights, too, is something that it's a major concern here. She's the update she has is that there's been a shower, one of the bays in which there would be showers, in which there would be other facilities for water. I guess, is it storage facilities? There are facilities available that are now currently not available because they were found to be earthquake cracked, earthquake damaged. Actually, it was sort of a scandal. The group that did the remodeling, or that handled the purchase of those that building out there, was a group called HIP, and it was I could have told them, not such a hot group, but then nobody asked me, so that's how it goes. But apparently they're getting on the ball now. The city council has funded more money to fix up the bays, and hopefully that'll happen within 60 days. And there's also going to be some water out at the field, where the only really legal place where people can sleep at a campground in Santa Cruz, because of the city's 11 to 8:30 a.m. sleeping ban, which is still in force, still being enforced. And unfortunately, I've just learned from Catherine Byers, the mayor, will not be on the agenda for a modification at the next city council meeting because she's going to be out of town. She's a little concerned that they need her vote. But there is a minor modification that will be coming up, I'm told, the second Tuesday in July at city council meeting, that will allow churches to let people park their three vehicles and sleep in their vans on church property. But anyway, the Karen Gillette Report, I'm going to interrupt briefly because I have an incoming phone call, and who knows, maybe this is important.
Hi there, you're important and you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi there, Robert, this is Matt. I ran into you up in San Francisco on Monday.
Uh-huh.
I was up there with my kids at the Food Not Bombs gathering.
Oh, yes. Yes, I remember you, Matt.
Yeah.
We kind of were huddling in the office after the police assaults.
Right, right. I was back up there on Wednesday
mm-hmm.
and Thursday. I was there last night, and...
Maybe you can give us a report.
Well, actually, I was kind of hoping if I could get a bit of a report from you, because at the time I left, which was shortly after the normal police raid on the dinner feeding, which actually there was about three, because the food came in a few waves.
Mm-hmm. Is it on Thursday night?
Yeah, that was last night.
Mm-hmm.
But shortly after that, a large crowd of Food Not Bombers headed off with the intention of marching to Mayor Frank Jordan's campaign office.
Yeah, I heard that they did do that, actually.
Yes, and I left about that time, and I was kind of curious if you had any word on what happened over there.
I did actually get a report last night. I called, talked to... Rahula from Arcata and Kim Argula from Santa Cruz, who were up in San Francisco at the Food Not Bombs office.
Uh-huh.
And the report was that there was one person arrested at lunch on Thursday, Aaron Ellis. Uh-huh. Some food did get served out in the Food Not Bombs Donut Brigade or Donut Liberation Front, whatever they call themselves.
I saw that. That was hilarious.
Really? Maybe you can tell us how that went.
Food Not Bombers came up dressed in mock San Francisco police uniforms, and I can't relate to you the dialogue they went to, but they went through a routine, as I said, pretty hilarious, making light of the police department, San Francisco Police Department.
They offered donuts to the police?
No, this was...
To sweeten their dispositions?
This was actually before the police showed up. You know, they came up, it was kind of just a performance.
Theatrical piece.
Yeah, before the actual police came up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just an excellent satire.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of impromptu thing. Fascist.
And the police are actually arrested four people, I'm told. Three from the Donut Brigade, four or five.
When they showed up, those are the people that they singled out, the ones that had badges on. Paper badges that said SFPD. Those are the ones they singled out.
Well, they were impersonating an officer, obviously.
Right. Right. Real danger to society there.
Well, what I did hear was that everybody who almost uniformly has been arrested, including activist Keith McHenry, who had so much trouble last year for all the bogus felony charges against him, were released without charges. So every I don't know if the people yesterday have been released, but there's sort of a process where they take people,
right.
They hold them on felony conspiracy to commit a misdemeanor charges, which means that three strikes and you're out. But of course it's all bluff. They've never taken a felony charge, and only one misdemeanor charge has ever been taken to trial in terms of serving free food. That was my case, and,
But it is serious harassment. They arrest
no question.
People for whatever felony conspiracy, whatever, just because they feel like it, and then they turn.
Oh, it's harassment and humiliation for the people who are being arrested. It's intimidation, and certainly chills free speech for anybody watching. It deprives homeless people of any sense of security that they can eat there. It's really another object lesson to put fear into the hearts of anybody who happens to be driving by, so they will, you know, recognize it and kowtow to the authority of the San Francisco Police Department, whatever it happens to be doing, whether it's, beating to death Aaron Williams, the black man who was beaten and maced and her pepper sprayed and then denied medical treatment, you know, or whether it's, making sure that protesters don't get their flyers to the delegates going into the UN building, which is what happened to me when I was up there.
Or
grabbing food before hungry people are...
Right, making, you know, arresting those bagels, you know, serious problem. But in answer to your original question about what happened after you left, which was last night, and I was told that they went and did a demonstration. They marched to Mayor Jordan's office where he was having a campaign party, and he was serving food, uh-huh. and there was an altercation. It looked like people were going to be busted. They were trapped in an alley. There were police coming in from all sides, but there were no bus eventually, and about 100 people demonstrated, and there were a large number of cops, and that was the report from Rahula of Arcata, who, Arcata is one of the other, there have been three cities I'm aware of where there's been an injunction against food nut bombs serving free food. One is San Francisco, one is Arcata, and one is Santa Cruz, where there's an injunction that is currently, it's against food not bombs, it dates all the way back to 1989, and then there was a more recent injunction passed again at the behest of our liberal city council, you know, where they got the city attorney to secure it, against three members of food not bombs, one of them who is dead, Linda Edwards, who died in early June, one the attorney Ray Gruneich, now in Sacramento, and one Lotus Maynard, who called on in at the beginning of this hour, a woman, we're hardworking, mom and grandma who works with Welfare Parent Support Group. So, yeah, that was her report. That's all I know at the moment. And if you have any more to add, I'd like to hear it.
Well, I kind of had another question, because I'm a relative newcomer to Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. and in the time I've been frequenting the Food Not Bomb servings here, they've been extremely peaceful, and I was... It was very different to be up there in San Francisco
yeah.
and see people there sitting, eating food, giving other people food, and see 40 riot cops with large sticks amassing in sweet food. But I've been told that it hasn't always been so peaceful.
No, it hasn't.
Can you give me a
sure, I can. On that? Before I do that, I want to encourage people that to go to San Francisco to support the right of people to receive and others to share free food. That there are people doing it, and they are getting arrested for it, but they need support. They can't go on forever doing this without support from people down here. So if you if you're going to San Francisco and you believe that it's wrong for people to be arrested for serving free food to other people, go down to UN Plaza at 12 and at 6 and check in at 25 Taylor Street, the Food Not Bombs office, which is operating around the clock in San Francisco. They need you up there. So, and if you need more information locally, give me a call at 423-HUFF or 423-4833, which is, HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. But regarding your question, about what happened down here, well, yes, there were major altercations and major police actions taken against people for serving free food. The first time, it actually happened as far back as Peter Carota's soup kitchen when the food was being distributed in the Beach Flats in 1982 and 83. I wasn't around when those particular incidents happened. I was in and out of town. But they didn't want Carota giving away food in the Beach Flats, so he ended up getting a permit for this St. Francis soup kitchen, an indoor kitchen, which now serves food to people up on, what is the name of it? It's right around near the lumber yard. And unfortunately, if you have a tie-dye, a button talking about the legalization of marijuana, if you've been a local activist, you're not welcome there, or at least you weren't when Lee Loboa was running the St. Francis soup kitchen. And I believe she's still, even though she's had a stroke or some such thing and had, you know, has health problems, her policy is still, unfortunately, part of the guiding light up there. So, what happened was we began serving free food. I, Linda Edwards, Jane Immler, Linda LeMaster, a number of local activists, Rocky Stone, Brian Kepke, in 1988, as part of a vigil to support Jane Immler's concern about the rights of homeless people who were being beaten by vigilante troll busters and also being harassed unmercifully by the police department under the sleeping ban. And we began serving at the town clock, and the mayor, then Marty Wormhout, demanded we leave or she'd arrest us. Jim Lang, assistant city manager at that time, acting assistant city manager when the city manager was away, moved, you know, had the troops come in. We did a deal over the Christmas vacation where we were able to, you know, to do some, they set up a food program, not the city, but the county, and with some federal monies. But then when that ended, we went back to the clock, started serving food, and the riot police showed up. They began arresting us and seizing food every day when it came in. And they got an injunction against us in February of 1989. They prosecuted two people through jury trials, one of them Brian Flanagan Staley, the other Sandra Loringer, both of which were, whom were convicted and sentenced to 2 to 3 weeks in jail, I believe, thereabouts. Made headlines as far away as Bombay, not headlines, but front page news, little stories. And it was a major disgrace, and as a consequence, we continued to serve free food. We were not intimidated away from doing it. We continued to do it. They continued to arrest us. They would seize the food. India Joe Schultz, the main master chef at India Joe's restaurant, was arrested by Marty Wormhout's police at that time, and he was dragged away because he brought his own food from a restaurant kitchen to try to serve homeless people. And there have been, that really was the last big series of arrests. It was in 1989. After that, the city decided that they had too much embarrassment, too much unfavorable publicity. Instead, they funded Jane Immler's, the same woman who had done the protest to start the free meal. She turned the free meal over to Karen Gillette, who started what's called a free meal in 1990. Food Now Bombs began here in 1992 out of the Union of the Homeless, which began a three-day encampment on the River and Josephine Street property, which is where Food Now Bombs now serves on Saturdays and Sundays at 1 o'clock. That's right across from Stapleton's. And Food Not Bombs was not ever arrested in Santa Cruz for serving free food, but they did go to court to get an injunction against them, a second injunction. They secured an injunction against the three individuals that I mentioned and also against the organization, but then through a legal defect, it was challenged as some legal technicality and they didn't pursue it. So Food Not Bombs wasn't, there were no further arrests until 1994 in May, and that happened a year ago at Cathcart and Pacific. You may have heard about that. What happened there was Food Not Bombs began serving on May 4th, and the city council had just passed the notorious anti-homeless downtown ordinances, the Kennedy-Rotkin Yokoyama ordinances that are still in the books, that are still being enforced, which make it illegal to sit down on the sidewalk. It's now somewhat less restrictive. You can sit on the sidewalk, but you can't sit 10 feet from a building. Sit near a shop, go to jail, is now the law. But then it was sit anywhere on the sidewalk downtown, go to jail, and ask for a spare change, go to jail. But the sit down on the sidewalk law was used to go after people eating free food, not the servers, but the eaters, on May 4th of last year. And a week later, literally hundreds of people showed up to support the right of Food Not Bombs to serve food. The police went crazy. Their beatings caused a miscarriage in one pregnant woman. Another man had his ribs broken, a rib broken. A dozen people were beaten. 50 or 60 people were arrested. No convictions whatsoever. And it was it's a real disgrace. And they're still pursuing these appeals through city council to try to maintain the fiction that they did the right thing. No redress to the police department was ever found. And perhaps I'm going on at too great a length, because I'm not, that's, that answers your question at all.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And I want to reiterate what you said before, and encourage everybody to go to San Francisco, show support for Food Not Bombs. It's really important, and all the help they can get.
How's your little girl doing?
Doing great. She didn't want to come back to Santa Cruz.
All right. That's a food criminal, eh?
Yeah, definitely.
Or a food felon, as we used to call him.
She also is shocked. Both of my kids are shocked by what's going on. They don't fully understand, but they know it's obvious it's wrong to take food from hungry people. It's not that difficult of an issue to understand.
Well, it was inspiring to me that she apparently heard my show and talked you guys into going up to San Francisco. Is that what happened, as I understand it? Or?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
And what is her name?
Allie.
Well, I want to thank Allie, if she's listening, for getting you guys off the dime to get up there and show your support. I mean, that's wonderful. And then if that happened, if, you know, one out of every 10 listeners did that, the police would just be, they'd be baffled. They couldn't uh-huh. continue what they're doing. And that's what happened actually here in Santa Cruz. We didn't change the law, but we stopped them from enforcing it in any rigorous way, because they I think they're still afraid that the same forces will coalesce and there'll be hundreds of people demonstrating downtown.
And it could happen. I mean, I think I can see it in the face of some of the police. They're getting really tired of this. It's silly for them, so many police, to go up there, spend all this time, spend taxpayers' money to grab bags of bagels.
It's hard, you know, it's really hard to figure. I've seen them do it for, they've been doing it since 1988 in San Francisco, and it's unfortunately the case that the police department is an insulated paramilitary organization, and they will continue to do it as long as they're ordered to do it,
yeah.
You know, with a few exceptions, and that those orders are going to continue to be given as long as politicians are run by downtown interests. And unfortunately, whether it's a liberal, a so-called liberal like Art Agnos, who began this harassment in the 80s, in the late 80s, or Mayor Jordan, who is, you know, a former chief of police and a right-winger, although, you know, he favors needle exchange, and I commend him for that. That he came out last week, supported needle exchange against the Attorney General's decision that needle exchange was illegal. Jordan said he's going to continue to give away free needles to those who needed them to stop and prevent the flow of AIDS. As long as the politicians are giving the orders to the cops, and as long as the developers think they can get away with, you know, essentially a naked monopolization and seizure of public property, the excluding of poor people from public spaces simply to make their business climate more favorable as they see it. It's merciless, it's brutal, it's vicious, it's unconscionable, and, you know, they attempt to obscure the issue with all kinds of smoke and mirrors. Like here in Santa Cruz, they talked about the downtown conduct laws, and for right now they're talking about mediating a code of conduct, which, you know, I mean, if the merchants had a code of conduct as well, in terms of, you know, not trying to seize all the property downtown and remove people they didn't like, if there were a real mediation process, which I don't really hope to see it, but I certainly advocate for it and support it, that would be one thing. What you have instead is a mass of lies, which is disseminated about